Now, fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
I was late and I overstayed. And honestly, folks, it was such a beautiful, beautiful visit and afternoon. But they can make anything bad because they are the fake, fake, disgusting news.
In recent weeks, the news media, the organization referred to as the press in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, has been called vile, disgusting, fake news, and in a series of tweets, the enemy of the people by President Donald Trump. Some journalists are pushing back, while others in the conservative media are also shining the president's spotlight on what they see as bias in some of the outlets that cover him. I'm Glenn Moberg. That's just one of the topics that we're going to discuss today on a Reporters Roundtable edition of Route 51. We'll also look at the upcoming August 14th primary and the races for Northern Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District seat, the U.S. Senate, and governor. And we'll listen to some of your perspectives on our current political climate, recorded this past week at the Wisconsin Valley Fair. Our guests today are Lane Kimball, news director for WJFW-TV, Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, Molly Kowick, morning anchor for WAOW-TV, News 9 in Wausau, and Robert Mentzer, the living and storytelling editor for the Wausau Daily Herald and USA Today Network Wisconsin. Well, we're going to be talking about politics today, and I imagine you've got opinions. You're welcome to share them with us. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on our webpage, wpr.org/route51, and I will read it live on the air. Well, folks, it seems like every 2 years during the election cycle, things get kind of crazy. But I don't even know where to start this year in terms of the polarization that's out there. The chaos, the distrust, the fact that people aren't talking to each other, it seems overwhelming at times. So let me ask our three reporters, how do you keep a level head when you're doing your daily job covering the news? Lane, let's start with you.
How do you keep a level head? Excuse me. You start by clearing your throat, I suppose. You know, we always say, you know, if we're hearing flack from both sides of the aisle saying you're covering this story wrong or you're biased toward one party or the other, we think we're doing our job right. So we don't like to hear bad things, but we embrace them if we're hearing them from both sides. So that's kind of when you talk about staying level and even keeled, that's the biggest thing that we look at is, are we hearing it from Republicans and from Democrats and from independents? Great. We're probably doing things right.
Molly Nowick, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I will see comments on our Facebook page that call us, you know, conservative jerks, or they'll say that, you know, we're soft liberals. And I would echo Lane's statement in that then we know that we're right down the middle, right where we need to be. And our reporters, you know, every time they set out on a story, look to make sure that they find balance, that they're hearing from both sides, and that that's then reflected in the stories that they tell.
Well, Rob Mentzer, the Wausau Daily Herald and the Gannett newspapers regionally, they never get any criticism.
Well, you know, I mean, you try to be in good faith in the way that we conduct ourselves and conduct our journalism. And some of these complaints are in bad faith, right? I mean, people are working the refs, right? You know, those who are who have a political interest or really identify with a partisan side want to. You know, the complaints aren't always in good faith. On the other hand, we gotta take criticism. It doesn't always mean that we've done something right. Maybe we did screw up. And so you as Molly said, you strive for balance, but it's also like just trying to conduct our journalism in good faith, no matter what the criticism is.
Well, let's talk about the criticism of the press from the White House and the pushback. We're going to play about a 2-minute clip here of the president speaking at a rally in Ohio, followed by a live shot by CNN reporter Jim Acosta at a Trump rally in Florida, and then an exchange between Acosta and White House press spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Did they apologize? Did you apologize for that mistake? No, I heard today. I heard today.
There is no other way to describe what the White House is doing these days. Wolf, top officials, including the president, are hiding from the press. And Wolf, just to give you a sense as to what's happening right now, you can hear there is a chorus of boos and other chants from this Trump crowd here in Tampa, Florida. They're saying things like CNN sucks, go home, and fake news.
Jim, that not only you and the media attack the president for his rhetoric when they frequently lower the level of conversation in this country. Repeatedly, the media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger. The media has attacked me personally on a number of occasions, including your own network, said I should be harassed as a life sentence. When I was hosted by the Correspondents Association, of which almost all of you are members of, you brought a comedian up to attack my appearance and call me a traitor to my own gender. In fact, as I know, I'm the first press secretary in the history of the United States that's required Secret Service protection. The media continues to ratchet up the verbal assault against the president and everyone in this administration, and certainly we have a role to play, but the media has a role to play for the discourse in this country as well.
All the people around the world are watching what you're saying, Sarah, and the White House for the United States of America, the President of the United States should not refer to us as the enemy of the people. His own daughter acknowledges that, and all I'm asking you to do, Sarah, is to acknowledge that right now and right here.
I appreciate your passion. I share it. I've addressed this question. I've addressed my personal feelings. I'm here to speak on behalf of the president. He's made his comments clear.
That's White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders and CNN's Jim Acosta sparring over President Trump's use of the phrase enemy of the people in describing the press. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a Reporters Roundtable edition of Route 51 with Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Molly Kowick of WAOW News 9, and Lane Kimball of WJFW News Watch 12. So what do you think of what you just heard? Lane, why don't we start with you again?
Sarah Sanders said something that I don't completely disagree with, in that the media has a role in this. I think where we run into a bit of an issue is we have these 24-hour news networks like CNN, like MSNBC, like Fox News, that constantly need to fill the airwaves with discussion about these things. And I think where a lot of people who get angry at the media, folks like myself or Molly or Rob, are mad about some of the talking heads that are on a lot of these shows that are, they're sharing their opinions versus reporters like ourselves who are out there trying to gather the facts, gather the information as accurately as we can, and spreading that to as many people as we can. And I think a lot of people who are absorbing the media don't draw that distinction. They say, well, that talking head is clearly biased, and maybe he or she is. But that's their job. Their job is to share their points of view versus our job is different, I would say.
There doesn't seem to be a clear line between opinion and journalism.
Exactly. Yeah.
Molly?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when you're watching TV, like Liam was saying, it can be tough to tell who is a real source, who is credible here, and then who is somebody who's just there to give an opinion. And that can be sort of a tricky thing to weed through when you're a viewer or a listener or a reader.
Rob, does Sarah Huckabee Sanders have a point? Has the media contributed to the coarsening of our political rhetoric? Is there bias in the cable news networks? And what about that choice of Michelle Wolf as the comedian at the White House Correspondents'
Dinner? This sort of points to one of the absurd things about this discussion, which is like the media. Like I had nothing to do with choosing Michelle Wolf for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. She's a comedian, whatever. So to me, I always think like if you have a criticism of a story or a person or a bad argument, like make that criticism by all means. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is free to do that. Donald Trump is free to do that. Whoever. But it gets weird to me when the media is a single category, because it's not. It's a million different people.
The Atlantic magazine's Todd Prudhomme wrote a piece last week titled "Jim Acosta's Dangerous Brand of Performance Journalism." He says Acosta is hurting the media, and here's a quote from the article: "Acosta's confrontation, so florid, so vivid, plays directly into Trump's received narrative about a hostile, combative, and even unfair press." Molly, you're nodding your head.
Anytime that we cover any story, whether it's political or otherwise, if there are questions that our viewers want to know, that the that maybe is a difficult question to answer. I think it's important to show that as a reporter that you are asking those questions. Otherwise, it looks like we're not doing our job. So I think that when outlets will show a reporter maybe sparring with someone a little bit or giving them a little bit of push, it's just showing to the viewer, yes, I'm here, I'm doing my job, I'm holding those powerful accountable, and not just I'm going to take the soft answer and sit back down.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in that position, we're not here to play softball. We're here to ask tough questions, and it's their job to answer them.
But there is for sure an element of professional wrestling to the Trump rallies. You know, I went to when then candidate Donald Trump was in the WASA area, right? And he sort of did the song and dance about look at those disgusting media people in the back of the room. That's that, you know, and the people boo. But it is kind of there is an element of pretend to it. There really is. There's an element of professional wrestling performativeness to it. The problem is it's like it's a big country, and that the line between performance and reality may not be so clear to
everyone. I think where some of the anger comes in from people who are outside the media who have the attacks on the media is fatigue. And to that extent, I give people a lot of credit in that I know and I've talked to people who are staunch Trump supporters and say, I don't care about Russia collusion. I care about the fact that I haven't had a job for 6 months. And so, yes, it is our job to ask those tough questions, but I think it's also our job to listen to our viewers or our listeners or our readers and say, what's important to you here? And so to constantly hammer and hammer and every single day is the same topic. It may be important, but I think you have to balance that level of fatigue a little bit for the people who are watching and listening.
Well, the use of the term enemy of the people has been criticized by a number of observers. Scott Simon of NPR, in an opinion piece, called it, here's a quote, an incendiary phrase uttered by some of history's most vicious thugs, Robespierre, Goebbels, Lenin, Stalin, and Mao, to vilify their opponents who were often murdered. The use of the phrase is also being criticized by conservative political operatives. Let's listen to two of them. First, we're going to hear Steve Schmidt, who ran John McCain's campaign for president, and then Republican strategist Karl Rove.
It's not just that Trump is assaulting objective truth. This is a political strategy. This is about a demand for obedience. This is the transformation of a smaller Republican Party into a cult of personality where what the leader says is true is true. What the leader feels to be true is true. And if you can subordinate reality at the command of a political leader, you are no longer functionally living in a democracy.
And calling them the enemy of the people, that just grates on me. I grew up, you know, during the time of the Cold War, and that is a phrase that was used by Stalin against the enemies of the communist regime. I think the president would be well advised, tone down the rhetoric, set the record straight in an appropriate way. But your audience is not the media, and your audience is not the hardcore base that loves you. There are people that go to those rallies, and when he says the fake news and the media and they're terrible and points at them, they scream and yell. But to win the election this fall, he's got to win the people who are up for grabs in this election.
So Karl Rove, political strategist, says this is counterproductive going into the midterms. And that first voice you heard was Steve Schmidt. He ran John McCain's campaign and later quit the Republican Party because of President Trump. The phrase enemy of the people, we've had a shooting at a radio station in Madison, WORT, over the weekend. We had a fatal shooting that took five lives at the Capital Gazette paper in Maryland. Reporters getting verbally assaulted and attacked at rallies. This is getting to be kind of a dangerous business for some of us. Are any of your organizations taking additional security precautions? Because I can tell you that Wisconsin Public Radio is.
Yes, USA Today Network Wisconsin is. Yes, building security and active shooter training is a part of our workplace.
Yeah, we've upgraded the security in our building, and then also we've had different trainings, and there are regularly emails sent out about best practices for safety.
Lane,
to answer yes, first and foremost, but also it's a sad reality, but also something that I think we always felt, especially in Rhinelander, but probably also in Wausau, a little more isolated. That's a big city issue, and we're seeing it's not necessarily. So we have to be cognizant. We tell our reporters, keep your head on a swivel when you're walking through the parking lot. If it's late at night, early in the morning, it's something you have to be aware of. 24/7.
Isn't that a damn shame? I mean, we're supposed to be open to the people. We're supposed to be a conduit for information. We're supposed to have wide open doors. Anyone can talk to us. At a certain point with the news media, if you have to start living like you're in an armed camp, what's the point of even going forward?
So I'm part of an all-female group on Facebook of female journalists, and someone posted just yesterday about a new product she found that is basically like a life alert button, but it's the 911 button, suggesting that other female journalists start to carry it around. And that is just kind of scary to think about and sort of a harsh reality.
I don't know how those who are listening are taking this conversation right now, but if any of you would like to share your feelings about this, please give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51, and I will read it live on the air. Rob, what do you think of the phrase enemy of the people?
So the media is not the enemy of the people, and in fact, a robust First Amendment and free press is one of the great things about America that we should all be proud of, and it's great. I do have a thought about the phrase enemy of the people, which is that part of the game here is that by going too far, by saying the extreme statement, that gets coverage and gets people talking. People like us are talking about this, and that wouldn't happen if the president said, "I think sometimes the media is biased and occasionally makes errors of fact that they're slow to correct." It is. I think that it is part of. There is something intentional in the strategy of saying the extreme thing, that the offensive thing, because then everybody sort of can go to their corners and play their part.
What's incredibly frustrating on that is the people that WJFW is an NBC affiliate, AOW is ABC. So people see what MSNBC does or even NBC Nightly News does, and they call us and say, "Why did you put that on the air?" And we say, "We're an NBC affiliate. We cover the news in Rhinelander and Merrill and Wausau and Tomahawk. We're not in Washington, D.C. And people aren't drawing that distinction either of local media versus, again, the media, as you talked about, Rob.
President Trump is a polarizing figure. That was apparent last week at the Wisconsin Valley Fair. I went to the Republican Party booth and the Democratic Party booth and asked people who stopped by about their opinions. The Democrats were outspoken in their disdain for the president. The Republicans, by and large, thought the media was unfair and wasn't getting a fair shake. So we're going to listen to four Republicans and then four Democrats, starting with Rose Stuplik, who said the hostility of those who disagree with the president has actually made her frightened.
A lot of bad actions that people are doing that the media doesn't want to talk about. Physical threats against people, physical violence against people, property damage. I have signs out in my yard, and I wonder now and again if my yard isn't going to be targeted because of it.
What drives me up a wall many times is an over-concern of political correctness. And I think we can just go back to the way that what is right and right and what's wrong is wrong, and there's not all these fragmented groups of people that we have to have so much sensitivity about. Just be kind to your neighbor.
I feel that some of the good things that our president is doing, that doesn't get talked about at all. I feel like everything that's positive doesn't get brought up.
So you've got a problem with media coverage of the president?
Oh, yeah, a little bit, yeah. I don't listen to it anymore. I don't listen to it anymore because they don't tell about the good that he's doing.
I like Trump. He's a little rough, but I agree with a lot of his opinions, and not everything, but for the most part, a lot of them.
I don't think I can say that on the air. I don't think much of him. I think of him as being a Russian puppet.
This president that we have right now is a laughingstock. Terrible, horrible for our country. I couldn't imagine that we could ever have a president that is this shameful, but we got one.
I am very embarrassed by him. I don't think anyone representing our country should talk the way he does. You should be someone who is polite and has higher values than what he has.
People who are busting their buns just to get by don't have an extra check to write. They don't have the money to contribute. So they're forgotten, they're discarded, and those are the majority of the people in this country, in this state, in this community. And that's why I think there may be a reckoning coming on in November, and I certainly hope there is.
The voices you heard in order are Rose Stuplik, Chuck Follis, Debbie Zastrow, and James Merchant, who we found at the Republican Party booth at the Wisconsin Valley Fair, and then Terry Ukeritz, Kevin Horacek, Sharon Hankey, and Jeff Johnson, who we found visiting the Democratic Party booth. Jeff Johnson is the only elected official of the bunch. He's a Marathon County board member. Your reactions to what you just heard.
This is going to sound hyperbolic, but I don't care. That two-minute clip was beautiful to me. You have people from both sides expressing their opinions, speaking the truth. I love the one gentleman who said, we don't need to have all this political correctness. Say what you think. And everybody shared their opinions there. Not once did I hear, you know, fake news. There were some people that said, I don't listen to the media, the reports, et cetera. But it was all reasonable. It was well-versed. And it was people sharing their opinions. What happened to that? Why have we changed from all of a sudden it's us against them? You can have your opinions, share them, and then share your opinions in the voters' booth. Somebody said there may be a reckoning in November. Fine, whichever side you're on, go vote. Don't threaten the media. Don't tune us out. You know, it was beautiful.
Molly?
I think what's interesting when you're listening to some of those clips there is you don't hear anyone who is at all in the middle. And obviously you were visiting the parties, but I also hear this kind of around town and speaking to viewers. It seems like you either are one side or the other, and no one is kind of finding any common ground. No one has moderate feelings on anything that's happening in our political climate or with the media right now.
Rob?
You know, only some people have – there are a lot of people who have sort of a very marginal affiliation with politics or with the news. And so you can kind of hear it, you know, in the clips. There are some people who are like really, really following the ins and outs of the news of the Trump administration on the day-to-day. Some people who just sort of are like, yeah, I kind of like the guy. And I think that on both sides, that's often the way that political identities are constructed, and more sort of like it's not that you have studied all the facts and reached a conclusion. It's kind of like, I think I'm sort of in this tribe.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We've got a couple of callers on the line, Steve in Tomahawk and Carl in Wausau. I want you to hang on. We'll get to you right after the break. You're listening to a Reporters Roundtable edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg with Lane Kimball of Newswatch 12, Molly Kowick of News 9, and Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. When we come back, we're also going to be talking about the 7th Congressional District primary race for the seat held by four-term incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. Going to take a break. Here's some music by Green Day.
Do you know the enemy? Do you know your enemy? Well, God, I know the enemy, right? Do you know the enemy? Do you know your enemy? Well, God, I know the enemy, right? Do you know the enemy? Do you know your enemy? Well, God, I know the enemy, right? Almost like the empathy, but catch your urgency.
Don Henley with his critique of broadcast journalism, taking us into the next segment of Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg with our Reporters Roundtable. Our guests, Lane Kimball, News Director of WJFW Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, Molly Kowick, Morning Anchor of WAOW News 9 in Wausau, and Rob Mentzer, the Living and Storytelling Editor of the Wausau Daily Herald and USA Today Network Wisconsin. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. We have Steve in Tomahawk. Steve, you're on Route 51.
The news media seem to have lost their credibility and their audience when they stopped taking pride in confirming that things were true before they reported them. And the president's comments really don't have anything to do with these recent shootings any more than the anti-American stuff that CNN puts out, caused Steve Scalise, congressman, to be shot and other congressmen shot at random and, and people throwing water on and assaulting, you know, Huckabee Sanders and other people that are just trying to go out to eat or do things with their family or going to watch Hamilton the musical. I think the press has just kind of totally lost its credibility because they're an advocate for the Democratic Party rather than like in the old days when they just reported the news instead of having their opinions mixed in.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for your comment. Any reactions from our panel?
I don't disagree with the fact that everybody deserves the right to go out to dinner, to go out to the theater, to go out to see a movie and not be harassed. I agree with that. Well, the one thing that stood out with his comments was he mentioned the press being anti-American. And that I question because you mentioned right at the top of the show, written into the First Amendment is the freedom of the press. If anything, the press is the most American institution in the country, or one of them, at least, I think. And that doesn't mean that everything we do is right. I think both you guys mentioned before, sometimes, yeah, we do get it wrong. And it takes a strong and right person to say, hey, I messed up. I screwed up this fact or this statement. We need to correct that. That is important. But to call some of the things the press is doing anti-American, I question that a little bit.
Let's move to Carl in Wausau. Carl, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. And I'm going to vehemently disagree with Stephen Tomahawk. And I'm going to say I'm hoping that the press, the media, is going to save America because I think we're in a constitutional crisis right now. And I think that's confirmed last night on the NBC, MSNBC, Nunes, a tape was aired.
Rachel Maddow aired that tape of some comments that he made at a Republican fundraiser when he didn't know he was being recorded. Go on.
Correct. And I think that demonstrates that there is truly a conspiracy between the GOP and the manipulator of the media, Donald Trump, that they are out to serve their own purpose, and the media is not doing its job properly, but ultimately it's going to be up to the media to save America from this constitutional crisis.
Carl, thanks so much for the comment. We got it. It's our job to challenge elected officials like Donald Trump, and if we don't do that, what's the difference between the United States of America and any tin pot dictatorship? Rob Menser?
Well, so I kind of just want to tell some good stories about Wisconsin. Like, I don't know. It's like a lot of pressure to have to save America. I don't know, guys. I think that done right, journalism can be useful to its audience, provide information that they didn't know before that changes a perspective on an important issue or informs the way that they see their civil society. We see over and over that among our most popular stories with our audience are watchdog stories, investigative stories, pieces that take a long time to put together or require records, fights, or whatever. People really respond to that because they value the information that's in those stories.
I want to switch gears here and talk about the 7th Congressional District race before we completely run out of time talking about this topic. We have two Democrats, Margaret Ingebretson and Brian Ewert, who have been critical of President Trump's policies, and Sean Duffy, who's been a supporter of the president. How do you think that's going to play out in the midterm elections? Molly, you have a perspective on that?
I think that one is going to be a very, very interesting race to watch, and I'll be very curious to see how that one plays out with the voters.
Well, we had the two Democrats, Margaret Ingebretson and Brian Ewert, in studio for a Democratic Party primary debate last Thursday on this show. They raised some eyebrows by both saying that they support the legalization of recreational marijuana. Let's listen to their comments and then the reaction of Congressman Duffy.
While there are some negative aspects to this, I believe that we should legalize marijuana both recreationally and medicinally.
We should legalize it because it is a waste of taxpayer dollars to be incarcerating people. But however, we need to treat this like the other chemicals that we have legal, whether that be nicotine or alcohol. It needs to be used responsibly, and we need to educate our young people.
I'm the father of 8 kids,
And I was a former prosecutor, and now as a congressman, I see what's happening in America with a drug epidemic, from opioids to meth to heroin. I think marijuana is a gateway drug to these other drugs. Marijuana shows up in the drug test. So if you want to drive heavy equipment, drive a big rig, you got to pass the drug test.
It's Congressman Sean Duffy, recorded at the Wisconsin Valley Fair, reacting to Margaret Engebretson and Brian Ewert, his potential Democratic Party rivals who say they want to legalize marijuana. Do you think this issue could have legs in the 7th District, particularly with younger voters?
Well, that's an interesting question to ask, because if you look at Sean Duffy in his last several elections, he has won handedly. I mean, he has not had an opponent get within, I think, like 20 points of him.
And the district is more Republican than it used to be before they gerrymandered it.
It's a huge district. And what's interesting as well is you ask about young people. And this is a hot-button topic for young people. Less so for the older generations. And I think Sean Duffy recognizes that and knows who his base is. He knows he has a strong foothold in the 7th Congressional District. So is it something that's going to drive enough young voters to the polls necessarily? It sounds like both Ewert and Engebretson are sort of banking on that a little bit. But I give Sean Duffy credit that he's always had that viewpoint. He's stuck to his guns on that, and he's saying, look, this is what I believe, and I'm standing up for that.
There's a substantive question about whether legalization of marijuana is a good policy or not, and there's a political question. Maybe we should talk about the substance, but on the politics, I think that quite clearly it is a policy proposal aimed at those people who are a little bit less, more marginally attached to politics, right? Somebody who might not otherwise be a regular voter, younger person or other, you know, members of groups that don't vote in every single election might see that as something different and a reason to show up. And I think that is one reason why a lot of Democratic politicians have put forward that proposal.
Molly Nowick?
Yeah, you know, I think that if we were talking about this being a statewide race, this could be carry a lot more weight, this argument. But I don't necessarily think that this is going to be that big come November.
Ewert and Engebretson also disagree with Sean Duffy on the Republican passed tax bill. There's no surprise there. Duffy says it's responsible for the booming stock market and low unemployment. Ewert and Engebretson say it's exploding the deficit, threatening Social Security and Medicare, and most of the benefits are going to the rich. So let's listen.
And you lower taxes so people can keep more of their own money. Remarkable things happen. The economy grows. The economy is exploding, and people are getting pay raises and better opportunities for better jobs. Just 3-4 years ago, people felt like they were stuck in a job. Today, you go down the street and you can probably get a better paycheck, maybe better benefits, and maybe a better boss.
First of all, at a time when we should be looking at shrinking our federal deficit, they grew the deficit by $1.5 trillion, and in the process, weakened Medicare. The Medicare Trust Fund now runs out of money 3 years early because of that way that tax law was passed. Even the corporate tax benefit went mostly to enriching CEOs through stock buybacks as opposed to having benefit go to the workers.
Yeah, that tax law they passed without any Democratic support, without hearings, was wrong and unethical in my view. It funneled almost all the benefits upward. We already have a huge wealth and income inequality situation in this country that is causing resentment.
And that's Margaret Engebretson and Brian Ewert, the candidates for the Democratic post running in the 7th Congressional District. That August 14th primary is coming right up, and Congressman Sean Duffy. Rob Menser, do you hear a lot of Republicans campaigning on that tax bill? I don't hear it.
No, indeed. And that's what we've seen in special elections. It has not been a factor across the country or whatever. I mean, Republicans can campaign on a strong overall economy. The economy is pretty good right now. It is growing and adding jobs, and there's some evidence that wages are rising, although that's a little more contested. But the tax bill specifically, I mean, it was a regressive tax cut. It was aimed, you know, the great majority of the benefits went to the top percents of the country. And so I haven't heard that seen as a political winner.
But in the run up to the passage of that tax bill, the stock market boomed. Since the bill's been passed, it's been kind of stagnant. We've been hovering right around the 25,000 mark. So it remains to be seen. We'll see if you know, the old mantra from the Clinton campaign, it's the economy, stupid, plays out in November. Let's listen to what the candidates say about another hot-button issue, immigration.
That is a disgrace, what's happening at the direction of President Trump and being carried out by our Border Patrol and ICE. It's just heartbreaking to have our nation, which I love and I know everyone else loves so deeply, to watch this, what we're doing. It's unconscionable. We must provide a pathway to citizenship.
Yeah, immigration is a great example of the failure of Congress in 2013. The Senate passed a bill and the House refused to even consider it. So I think this again speaks to why we need a change in Congress. Clearly, in terms of the families, separation, that violates our core values and should never, ever happen again.
We're working on securing our border. I was a supporter of a plan that would have secured the border, would have fairly dealt with the DACA kids, and then dealt with our immigration system so people don't have to actually come across the border on a dangerous journey with little kids. You can actually apply for a visa and get on a plane and fly to America, not hike across the desert. So we're working on that. I think we're going to get it done at some point.
Well, this, of course, is an issue that not only affects Hispanics living in the 7th District, but also the dairy farms, the meatpacking plants, and the factories that employ them. Lane, any thoughts on how this might play out?
Immigration, I think, up here, especially where we are even farther north in Rhinelander, is tricky because I talked earlier about isolation. I think people feel so far removed from the Texas border, from that border, that you know, you see those stories, and many of them are heartbreaking. The separation of children led nightly news for like 2 weeks straight. But at the same time, a lot of people say, do it the right way. You heard Ivanka Trump this week had an interview in which she said, look, that is heartbreaking to see those children separated, but I am the daughter of an immigrant who did it the right way. And I think that's almost a resounding echo of people that we hear in our neck of the woods, is them saying, look, you feel terrible for the kids, but at the end of the day, we want people to enter this country legally and morally and doing it the right way. So it's definitely something that's going to be talked about, but it's tricky for I think the Democratic candidates to really push against Sean Duffy in this race.
What about Molly Nowak, the moral outrage caused by separating parents from their children? That's something that cuts across party lines.
Right. I mean, I think here there's a lot of really strong family values. So I think that is something that voters and families here can definitely relate to. At the same time, though, I think that we are very far from the border. And so I think that in general, immigration, while it may be a hot button topic, is not the absolute number one priority for voters in our area.
Did Representative Sean Duffy say that he expects there to be a comprehensive immigration bill? Like, in what universe is that is very hard to imagine. The Republican majority is this close to the election. Like, how is that going to even happen?
Well, he said they'd get it done. Now, presumably, you know, I didn't follow up on it, but I took him to mean that if we return Republican majorities in Congress, that's something that they might be able to pursue in the 2 years leading up to the 2020 election. Let's go to the phones. We have Tony in Tomahawk. Tony, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. Interesting discussion. A comment on this tax bill and the benefits of the tax bill, and I don't hear anybody, even in the business channels, talking about the fact that there's a gross reduction in taxes, but the net, if you factor in inflation, nobody is really winning. And this isn't too far into the weeds. It really isn't. Everybody understands gross and net. So if I get a $1,000 tax cut, but inflation eats it away, there's no benefit. There is no real benefit. And inflation is almost 3% now. It was not that high under Obama. And, you know, it's not a pro-Obama statement. It just wasn't. In fact, there was no Social Security increase for several years because inflation was so under control. Now it's heading toward 3%. And there's really no net benefit from this tax bill.
Anybody want to pick up on that?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on where you sit on the spectrum, right? I mean, if on the upper levels and for corporations, the tax cuts were quite substantial. I guess maybe that there is a lot more truth to that if you're in the middle classes, where the tax cut is measured in the amounts of hundreds.
We have an interesting assembly primary race in the region in the 86th Assembly District on the Republican ballot. Incumbent John Spiros of Marshfield is facing a challenge from the mayor of Mosinee, Brent Jacobson. The winner takes on Democrat Nancy Tabaka-Stencil. Rob, I'm going to go back to you. You've been covering politics in this region for a while. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's hard to – it's not exactly as if it's a little hard to see a strong ideological difference. And for a primary challenge to be successful, you need to sort of – often you need to make the case to the party's base that this guy has sold out true conservative principles or is not progressive enough on the liberal side. And it's a little – I haven't quite seen the substance of that argument.
Molly, any is that raising a lot of ripples at News 9?
Everyone, when we were talking about this race earlier this week, everyone thinks that this race is going to be very interesting because you've got a Republican incumbent already in office, and then you have the mayor of Mosinee. The mayor is typically a very well-known person in a community who will be challenging an incumbent within his own party. So I think that it'll be interesting to see how that one will ultimately play out. Because I don't know if a lot of people necessarily even realize that if they want to keep Spiros in office, that they would have to vote for him in the primary.
You're listening to a Reporters Roundtable edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg with Lane Kimball of Newswatch 12, Molly Kowick of News 9, and Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the U.S. Senate race and the race for governor. Here's music by Hedgehoppers Anonymous.
It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's Good News Week. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live, go on and never die. Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today? It's Good News Week.
There ain't no news on the jukebox. There ain't no good inside. There ain't no indication of where you are tonight. There ain't no news on the jukebox.
Central Wisconsin's own Jerry Schmidt taking us into our final segment of Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg with our guests Lane Kimball, news director of WJFW Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, Molly Nowick, she's the morning anchor at WAOW News 9 in Wausau, and Rob Menser, the living and storytelling editor of the Wausau Daily Herald and USA Today Network Wisconsin. Well, Donald Trump's presidency is also hanging over the U.S. Senate Republican primary race between Kevin Nicholson and Leah Vukmir. Both are running campaign ads claiming that the other isn't conservative enough and doesn't support Donald Trump enough. So let's listen to what they have to say. Well, I don't have the tape queued up right now, so why don't I get reaction from one of our guests on how that race is playing out. Lane, let's go to you.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's who's redder than who, right? Who can align themselves closest with Donald Trump? And at face value, maybe that is a wise strategy. You look at Donald Trump won the state of Wisconsin for the first time since 1980 or something like that. Granted, not by a ton of votes, but the president won the state of Wisconsin. It'll be interesting, though, to see them try and pivot then whoever comes out of that race into the fall to run against Tammy Baldwin and say, well, yeah, we were so Trump, but now we're kind of in the middle of the road. How do they get those voters? And Wisconsin is such a purple state right now that they're going to have to back off on that a little.
All right, let's listen to that tape now. Here's Leah Vukmir, Kevin Nicholson, and Tammy Baldwin recorded yesterday in Stevens Point.
I have always been there with him. I've stood with him. I continue to stand with him. I was part of the Women for Trump radio ads that went out during some of the darkest moments before the election when people were walking away from him. I'm proud to stand with him. I want President Trump to succeed.
I look at the president's agenda and I say it's a darn good one, and everyone in this room knows it. Look, tax reform policy, giving money back to the people of Wisconsin, flowing billions of dollars back into our country so it can be invested in companies that can grow, smart. The president's done good work and we should applaud him for it.
I've actually teamed up with Trump on issues that I think will help the people of my state. My litmus test is if his policies that he's promoting or his nominees for various cabinet posts are going to be fighting for Wisconsin, I'm going to be right there. And if they're not, I'm not going to be shy or quiet about my opposition.
So that's Tammy Baldwin. She says she supports Donald Trump on his Buy America movement, and she opposes him on the tariffs. Molly Nowak.
Yeah, well, Tammy Baldwin doesn't have to worry about beating anyone in her own party at this point. So she's just, I think, probably trying to grab some of the more moderate voters, the people who are undecided. And so I think that's probably why she's sort of staying right down the middle of the, right now until November. Now,
Rob, what do you make of Tammy's comments?
Sure. I mean, as Lane says, it's Molly's a classic primary versus general election issue where as of Wednesday, the Republican nominee is going to be very bipartisan. But as of today, they're full on Team Trump, and it's because it's a different electorate in the primary and general elections.
Well, let's take a quick look at the gubernatorial race in Wisconsin. We've got 8 Democrats for the primary on August 14th. The leader in the polls, Tony Evers, is also leading in a poll against incumbent Republican Scott Walker, leading by a substantial number, 13 points. We asked Walker about that at an appearance last week in Rothschild.
Well, the only poll that matters is on Election Day, and so you'll see some up, some down, some all over the place. But I think really what it boils down, and it ties to what we're talking about here today. I think if people look at where we're headed versus where we've been, as parents in this state, I talk to people all the time who say their greatest concern is that their children will grow up and graduate, find meaningful careers that keep them relatively close to home here in Wisconsin. Before I was governor, our graduates were going to other states because there weren't jobs here in the state of Wisconsin. We've changed that. There are more people working today than there have ever been in the history of the state of Wisconsin. Unemployment's been below 3% 5 months in a row. That's the first time that's ever happened in our state's history. And so I think in the end, voters will have a clear choice.
And Scott Walker counting on the economy to pull him over the finish line, Lane.
Yeah, and I was at one of the governor's press conferences where I wish I had
pushed
him.
You asked that question.
I wish I had pushed him a little bit harder on because he did the classic political move where he just kind of danced around the question. I have to imagine that seeing those numbers, whether it's 13 points or 7, Governor Walker's campaign has to be a little concerned, and this is different now. You know, he's been in office for a while. He's brought up the dead man Walker analogy that he references, where he was down in the polls before. It's very different. So, yeah, I mean, the economy will be big. I'll be curious to see as well. We talk so much about President Trump, how much he aligns himself as well. You had the Foxconn deal, but also, of course, plenty of people who are opposed to Trump as well.
We've got a whole bunch of people running. Tony Evers, who we just mentioned, Kelda Royce, she's raising a lot of money. We have Malin Mitchell, who's a firefighter and a union leader. Mike McCabe, ostensibly an independent. He ran the Wisconsin Democracy campaign. Paul Soglin, the former mayor of Madison. Kathleen Weinhout, she's a state senator and dairy farmer from northern Wisconsin. Matt Flynn, an attorney who represented the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Josh Pate, an attorney who interned for former Senator Russ Feingold. Who do you think is going to win, Rob Menser?
What kind of question is that? So in a primary, things preferences can change very quickly because the candidates share a lot of viewpoints and ideological views. So I don't know, and I don't know how much we should take a poll that was taken a month ago as determinative in the case of a primary when people can kind of be like, yeah, you know, I sort of like what that one had to say.
And we've also got other candidates. Phil Anderson is running as a Libertarian. Michael White is a Green Party candidate. Independents Maggie Turnbull and Arnie Entz. And there's even a Republican running against Walker, Robert Meyer. So, Molly, voters have a lot of choices.
They certainly do have a lot of choices. And I thought one thing that was interesting from last night's debate is the Democratic candidates were actually given their own choices. You know, if you weren't running, who would you be voting for? And I thought that it was interesting that three of them came away saying Soglin. It was Flynn, Roy's, and Soglin himself. He said that he would just write in his own name in and go as a write-in candidate. So, you know, you've got a pretty big pool, but three people would be pulling for one person if they weren't in the race.
Because you can't say the person that you think is closest to you.
Right. It has to be the farthest removed
far away.
Person.
Yeah, no big deal. Yeah.
Lane, we're almost out of time. Give me a 10-second wrap-up on the governor's race. Who do you think is going to win?
who's going to win the primary? Or I would have to believe that it's Tony Evers, not just because he's up in the polls. He has the biggest statewide recognition, I think. So Evers, I would not be surprised if he holds on to that lead.
We're out of time. We want to thank our guests, Lane Kimball, news director for WJFW News Watch 12 in Rhinelander, Molly Kowick, morning anchor for WAOW-TV News 9 in Wausau, Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald and USA Today Network, Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Bob Dylan, Green Day, Don Henley, Hedgehoppers Anonymous, Jerry Schmidt, and Canned Heat. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it again Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM Wausau. Don't forget to vote Tuesday, August 14th. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.